the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel. I don't know why, but I've been thinking about Daniel recently, and I don't know if it's because of the prophetic part of his book. You can actually divide the book of Daniel into two sections. You can divide, I think, the first six chapters into the history of the world, and then the rest of the book, it talks about prophecy. And I don't know if I want to begin on Wednesday night. I'm thinking about this, maybe preaching through the book of Daniel, maybe not verse by verse, but then again, maybe verse by verse. I'm waffling. I tell people sometime when I haven't made my mind up, I'm a double-minded man and I'm unstable in all my ways. And so I want us to look tonight at the book of Daniel, and the title of the message is "He Touched Me." He touched me. If I had a voice that was decent, I'd just break out into that song right now. You know, he touched me. That's a song that you've probably heard from the time that you were knee high to a red bug, as the old saying goes. And I know Brother Keith knows that song, and I know Daryl knows it, and you probably know it. But Daniel is he's a special, special man. He's one of the heroes of the Bible. I don't know that you can really find anything in Daniel's life that really could be looked at as a negative. I tell you who he's like, and this is a short list. When you look at Old Testament characters, the only one that I can think of that you can't really find anything to criticize is probably Joseph. Joseph and Daniel, that's pretty good company. You can probably throw the three Hebrew children in there, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You can probably throw those guys in there. But that list is pretty short when it comes to the people in the Bible that are, they're not criticized because they've done nothing to be criticized for. And so when you look at the book of Daniel, let me just share a couple of things with you. There's two phrases that I love here. And you see this in chapter 2 and in chapter 4. And I hope I jotted these down right. But I want you to look with me at chapter 2. And I want you to look at verse 28. And listen to this. "But there is a God in heaven." That's special. "There is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days." Look with me back at verse 18 of chapter 2. "That they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret." Look with me at verse 19. It says, "Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven." Look with me at verse 20. I already looked at verse 28. Look at verse 37. "Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory." And then look with me at 44. "And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, and it's never going to be destroyed." And so in chapter 2, you've got this one special phrase, God in heaven. Well, if you want to go over to chapter 4, what you'll find is you will find another phrase. And look with me at chapter 4, and let's look at just a couple of verses. Look at verse 24. "This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord, the king." So it's the Most High. You don't get any higher than the Most High. And then look at verse 32. And they shall drive thee from men. Thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen. Seven times shalt pass over thee until thou knowest that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. So the second phrase is the Most High. So what are these phrases together? Well, it basically lets us know that God is in control. It lets us know that it does not matter who it is, whether it's Nebuchadnezzar or whether it's you and me, God is in control. Nothing slips up on God. God knows what's going to happen. If God did not know, he would not be omniscient. That is one of the attributes of God. God knows the beginning from the end. There's certain people that teach doctrines like, well, God doesn't really know everything. No, biblically, he knows everything. You don't get to deny certain doctrines that the Bible teaches just because it doesn't fit your particular type of theology. And so you've got these phrases. Well, you find phrases like that throughout the book of Daniel. And I came across this reading a commentary on Daniel. And I thought tonight, you know, what a great Bible study this would be for us just to see this. Now, for four Wednesday nights, I did a series while Ann had the ladies next door. I did a series on searching the scriptures with the men. And one of the things that we talked about is studying the Bible topically. How that we would take a word or we would take a thought and you would begin to run that thought. And as I was reading this commentary, the commentator, he made the point about what we're going to talk about tonight, where that Daniel was touched by God. And so I want us to just look at five portions of scripture this evening. I won't spend a lot of time commenting on them. I just want you to see this, that as you read the Bible, things will pop out to you. And as I read the Bible, things will pop out to me. And there are times when I am reading my Bible and it's as though that certain phrases or certain words just seem to leap off the page. And you've probably experienced that same thing. And so tonight, I want us to just look at five passages about Daniel being touched and what he received by these times he was touched. Look with me at chapter 8. We're going to be in chapter 8, 9, and 10. Okay? Chapter 8, verse 18. Now as he was speaking with me, who is the he? It's a reference back to verse 16. It is Gabriel. Gabriel is one of the three angels that is named in the Bible. You have Michael, you have Lucifer, and you have Gabriel. Gabriel is the one that seems to have the trumpet or the shofar of God. And so he is the one that is talking to Daniel. And so it says, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep. In other words, he was out, but everything was vivid. This conversation was something that was actually happening, even though he was under divine anesthetic. All right? He said, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but here's the phrase, but he touched me and he set me upright. Now, have you ever had a dream so vivid that you can just simply recount what was going on? I've had some dreams that are nutty, but I don't think I've ever had a situation like this, even though there are times when I think that the Lord has spoken to me during the night, not audibly, but it's as though it is in my own mind audible. If I ever get to the point where I tell you that I've heard a literal voice from God, you need to say, let's go get him some counseling, all right? But when you go to the Old Testament, there were times when those men literally received visions and they heard the literal voice of God. We have the Word of God today during New Testament times. But he said, he touched me, he set me upright. And why did he do that? And he said, behold, I will make thee know. I'm going to let you see what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. So what is that a reference to in verse 19? That's a reference to the tribulation period. And so he is touching him for a purpose, so that he will be able to see the last things. You and I need to have a touch from the Lord. And we talk about that. And I talked about giving God giving us his presence. All of those are simply ways to express a desire that we have, where that we want God to do something special in our lives. Some of you can remember years ago, maybe when you were at a church service, and maybe God just somehow did something unique for you at that service. I remember my summer before my senior year, I went to a summer camp, and evangelist Wayne Swearingen was preaching. And the only time I'd ever heard of Wayne Swearingen was because he was the camp evangelist. I don't know if he's still living, but I know this. I know that some reason God used him in a very special, special way in my life. And he challenged everybody, and I felt like he was challenging me personally, to just live for God. And when I just kind of laid it all out on the altar during that summer camp, it was as though I could just see clearly what I needed to do. And it was because I think the Spirit of God had touched me. And so Daniel experienced that. And you've probably experienced that. Maybe you have gone to a revival service. Maybe you've gone to some type of Bible conference. Maybe it was just a Sunday morning. Today, whenever I was over at Brother Olin's house and Miss Gwen was there, she talked about the first time that she walked into this building. She said, when I walked in, I knew God was there. And she said, I don't know why people don't want to go where you can feel God. And it was as though God touched her the first time that she came in. And she said, I've had other people tell me that. And I pray to God that's the case. I've known of times when I've gone to places and it's as though as you walk on the property, there's something different about that place. And we've often prayed that when people drive or walk on the campus of this church, that there would be something unique, something different about people that are experiencing maybe the presence of God. And so when we look at chapter 8, he is touched. And I want us to be touched, not in a way where we say, well, that old boy's touched. That means he's nuts. Not that kind of touching. I'm talking about where that God has done something in our souls. That's number one. Number two, look with me at chapter 9 and look at verse 21. Yea, whiles I was speaking in prayer, he's not, you know, really in a vision right now, he's just praying. Even the man Gabriel, so Gabriel's back, all right, whom I had seen in the vision, where's the vision? Back in chapter 8. At the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, here it is, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. Now, what was the evening oblation? It was the time to pray at night. You had a morning prayer, you had an afternoon prayer, and you had a nighttime prayer. And so he touches Daniel as he is praying. And what did he do? He informed me, talked with me, and said, "Oh, Daniel, I am now come forth." Why did he touch him? "To give thee skill and understanding." In other words, I want to give you the ability to know and to discern. Well, I think that Daniel had that ability for a good while, but maybe the Lord needed to give him a little clarity with some of the later chapters. Because when I think of Daniel, I think of somebody that already had a pretty clear vision of what was happening. When he can predict 2,500 years of secular Gentile history, when he can talk about the Babylonians, and he can talk about the Persians, and he can talk about the Grecians, and he can talk about the Romans, and then he talks about there's going to be a stone that comes out of heaven and smashes that revived Roman Empire. To me, that's pretty good understanding. But evidently, as you get into some of these later chapters, Daniel needed maybe a little tutorial. And so this angel, Gabriel, touches him and gives him understanding or discernment and skill in being able to discern what he is hearing. There's a lot of people that read. There's not always a lot of people that discern. I heard years ago about this old country guy, and he was trying to get a job with the railroad. And he said, I need a job with the railroad. And the guy that was doing the hiring said, "Well, I need to ask you a question." And he said, "Okay." He said, "If you've got a train that's leaving Birmingham and it's going 70 miles an hour, and on the same track there's a train that's leaving Atlanta and it's going 60 miles an hour, and you were working for the railroad and you saw this situation, what would you do?" And he said, "I'd holler RT. And the guy scratched his head and he said, No. He said, "I want you to understand there's a train from Birmingham going 70, on the same track, one from Atlanta going 60, and those things are going to meet. What would you do if we hire you at the railroad?" He said, "I'd holler RT. And he said, "I don't think you're understanding that." And the man said, "Oh, I understand perfectly." He said, "You got a train from Birmingham. It's on the same track that a train from Atlanta going 60 and this one's going 70. And if something's not done, they're going to hit and collide. And you want to know what I would do?" He said, "That's right. That's exactly what I want to know what you would do." He said, "I'd holler RT. And he said, "Well, why would you say RT? He said, "Because my cousin RT, he ain't never seen a wreck this bad." Well, some people can understand, but they can read, but they cannot understand. And you and I need to be able to discern the times. I was talking with Brother Stephen's son today, and he is evidently well versed in the scriptures. And he asked me a question. He said, "Do you really think that there's going to be a revival in America?" And I said, "I'd like to think so. I would like to think there would be, but I don't have much hope that there will be." I said, "As a matter of fact, we may already be under the judgment of God. It may have already begun." And he said, So you think that the Lord maybe is let Satan have his way?" And I said, "Well, not totally." I said, "But I do think that Satan is getting more and more brazen in the way that he goes about things. You have people that have an open hostility toward God. They hate Jesus Christ. They don't want anything to do with his claim of lordship. And you've got people that name the name of Christ as Christians, and they don't want to do anything at all to live for him. And so when he and I were talking, he said, well, I believe that the Lord is kind of removing his protection from us. And I said, I would certainly agree with that. I said, now, do you believe that we're in the tribulation? And he said, no. I said, good, because I don't either. I don't think that we have begun the tribulation period. I think that that's going to happen when the man of sin is revealed, according to 2 Thessalonians 2. But I want to be able to understand the times in which we live. Now, let me just back up a minute. I think God can send revival if he wants to this country. As a matter of fact, there's going to be a Friday in September, September the 10th. We're going to be hosting a rally for a bunch of preachers in the state of Georgia. And there's an evangelist named Byron Fox. And Brother Fox is going to be here. And David Barton, the historian from the Wall Builders, is going to be here. A guy named Chad Conley, he is a kind of a PAC guy. When I say PAC, like a political action committee guy from over in South Carolina. I've heard him two or three times. He's just a ball of energy. And these three guys are going to be here on a Friday with a bunch of preachers. And we're going to host it. And I told him, I said, Brother Byron, I said, I want you to know this. I said, I'll be happy for our church to give you a facility. I said, but I'm not going to the Capitol the next day. And I'm not going to go down there and get involved in politics. I said, I swore off politics after the election in 2020. And I said, I'm going to vote. And I said, I'll welcome you guys here. But I said, I just want you to know that I'm not joining a political action committee. And I said, so if we can understand that, that'd be great. He said, oh, that's great, preacher. Said, I don't have a problem in the world with that. He said, but I just think we need to start fighting. I said, I don't have a problem with that either. And so anyway, in September, we're gonna host that. And God can send revival if he chooses to. But I know this. I know we need skill. We need to have the ability to discern, and we need the touch of God to do that. Let me give you a third thing tonight. Look with me at chapter 10, verse number 10. And behold, an hand touched me. There's our phrase again. Which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. So in other words, he's on his face. He's on his knees, and all of a sudden he's lifted up, but his hands are still down, his palms are down, he's still on his knees. And what did this hand that touched him, what did it do? He said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright. The touch of God gave him the ability to stand. Now you think about the situation that Daniel found himself in, right? He's a young man, probably a teenager, somewhere between 14, 16 years of age. The Babylonians conquer Israel. Actually, they conquered Judah, if you want to be precise about it. The nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, had already gone into captivity by the Assyrians. But you've got Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, along with a lot of the other goodly young people. They are taken into captivity, and they have left now the land of Palestine, and they are in Babylon. They are there. They're Hebrews, and if they're going to try to be trained in the way of the Babylonians or the Chaldeans, they must be prepared. And right off the bat, they start giving them a special diet But Daniel does not want anything to do with the meat that has been offered to idols. He doesn't want somebody to be able to say, well, the reason that he is healthy is because of the God that that meat was sacrificed to. So he talks to the man that's in charge and he says, look, let's do an experiment. Let me and my friends just eat pulse. What that means is they just eat vegetables. None of that meat that's been sacrificed to any of these pagan deities. And he said, if we are not healthier than the other ones that are eating that meat, then we'll start. And several weeks later, they look at him, they begin to inspect him, and Daniel and his buddies are more healthy. They're more, fleshed out. All right. I don't think they were fat by a million miles, but they were fleshed out. They were strong. They had good color. They were just healthy. Well, as he goes and he talks to Nebuchadnezzar, you're talking about the most powerful man in the world at that time. You're talking about a man that all he had to do was just nod and somebody would have killed him on the spot. I mean, he had people that would execute people, you know, and not even think twice about it. And yet Daniel is so brave, he's able to stand. And yet here he is, he's in prayer. And what do you have? You've got another world leader. You see, Nebuchadnezzar died. And his son, Nabonius, he took over, but then he basically said, hey, I want to let my son, we know him as Belshazzar. He's the one that had that big dinner that night, and the hand of God wrote on the wall, mien, mien, tekel, upsarin. Says, thou art weighed in the balance and found wanting. And so that night, Babylon fell. Nebuchadnezzar was dead. Now Belshazzar's dead. Nabonis, he's not even around. Who takes over? Cyrus and Darius. And so we see that it's in the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia. And so now you've got Daniel. He's no longer a teenager. Daniel's an older man now. Daniel lived to probably be well over 70 years of age. And all through those years, he started out as a young teenage boy, and he made good decisions when he was young, and it helped him in his decision-making when he's old. If there's one thing that I wish that teenagers had, that most of them do not, I wish that they had the ability to discern. Most of them, they can be pressured into decisions just by the group that they hang out with. And it's a rare thing to be able to find a young person that can not be intimidated by the peer pressure. But if they can somehow find that fortitude, that internal strength, that will bode them well for later years. And so he was touched to make him stand upright. And I believe this. I believe that when God comes into our life, really in certain ways, that I think that he will give us the ability to just be strong, to give us the standing that we need to have. As the old saying goes, he can give us a backbone like a saw log. And that we will not be intimidated, and he was not. In that particular passage there, he had been speaking, and what had taken place? He said, well, fear not, Daniel, from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before the Lord, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. And this is one of the beautiful stories that lets us know about angelology in the Bible. Because the prayer was heard day one, but it took 3 weeks, 21 days, because the prince of Persia withstood him. And Michael, he had to be dispatched, and he permitted this angel, which is probably Gabriel, he permitted him to go through because the king of Persia had to stand down because of the rank of Michael. And so we see that God touched him so he could see. We see that God touched him so that he could have skill and discernment. We see that God touched him so that he would stand. But then I want you to look at verse 16. And behold, one like the similitude of the sons of men touched my lips. So there's a fourth touching. He touched my lips. What happened when they received that touch? I opened my mouth and spake. In other words, the touch of God gave him the ability to speak, and to speak honestly, correctly, to speak with integrity, to speak with truth. And when we speak, we ought to speak with truth. When we are in conversation with people, we ought to be as honest as we can possibly be when it comes to the things of the Lord. And so Daniel, he is looking at one of these angels, one of these men that has the form of a regular man, but he knows that it's just that similitude of that. And so he said, I just opened my mouth and spake, and I said unto him that stood before me, O my Lord, by the vision my sorrows are turned upon me, and I have retained no strength. And so we see that there is a speaking that we find in verse 16. Let me give you one more and we'll be done. Look at verse 18. Chapter 10, verse 18. Then there came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man. How do angels usually appear in Scripture? They usually appear in the masculine form. Now, there is no gender among the angels, all right? There is no male, there is no female, but biblically, whenever you see an angel, almost invariably it is in the form of a man. Now, there's a verse over in the Gospel of Matthew, it talks about that the angels are neither marrying or giving in marriage. They don't experience intimacy the same way that humans do. But when they are observed by we humans, they usually look like men. If you want to have a quick story about that, all you got to do is go back over to Genesis, and you know the story of Lot. You've got Lot, and what did he do? He separated from his uncle Abraham, and Abraham said, we don't need any strife between our servants. He said, you choose what direction you want to go, and you go that way, and then I'll choose the other way. But you choose. Well, if Lot would have been the nephew that he should have been, he would have said, Uncle Abraham, you choose. But that's not what he did. And so when Abraham offered that to him, he jumped at the chance, and what did he do? He looked toward the plains of Sodom, and he said, oh, those are well watered. They're well taken care of. That's where I'm going to go, because my sheep, my goats, my camels, my livestock, they'll have green grass to graze on. And so Abraham, he said, okay, you go. And when you read the life of Lot, what do you find? He looked toward Sodom. Later on, you see him stopped, and he's leaning toward Sodom. And the last thing you see, he's living in Sodom. And so you've got the destruction of Sodom that's about to take place. God tells Abraham, I'm going to wipe the place out. Abraham knows that Lot's already living there. He's not just looking toward it. He's not just leaning toward it. He's living there. And he said, Dear Lord, he said, if you can find 50 righteous men, would you spare it? Okay. What about 40? Okay. What about 30? Okay. What about 20? Okay. What about 10? And Abraham's negotiating. I don't know if that's where the reputation of the Jewish people comes from, being able to haggle, all right? But they could not find 10 righteous people. If Lot would have just been righteous, he had sons and daughters that were there that had married. So if you got him and his wife and his maybe two sons and their wives and his two daughters and maybe a couple of grandkids, if all those 10 were righteous, it would have been saved. And so what did they do? They had to get out. And how did that happen? God sent two angels. He went in, and when he went in, those men went in, they went in and they looked like men. And when they went to Lot's house, come on, let's go. God said, get out of here. We got to take you out of the city. And all of a sudden, you've got a crowd of men that are coming. And those men are saying, hey, we want to know those guys. And the word know is the same word that Adam knew his wife Eve and she conceived. That type of knowing, all right? And so Lot pulls them inside. And these guys are outside and they're screaming, yelling, send us out those men. And to show you how godless old Lot was, he said, I've got two girls. You know, they've never known a man. Hey, take them and do with them whatever you want to do. Now, I got two girls. I'll shoot somebody over. But not him. He's just giving his girls away. You know, use them. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. And they said, we don't want those girls. We want those men. And so those men opened the door, and when they did, they smote them with blindness. And when you read that story to see how a lust-filled heart is, what did those men do? Even though they had been smitten with blindness, they were still on the front porch trying to find a way to get into that door. That's godless. And so you've got those angels, and they look like men. And so you see in verse number 18, he says, there came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man. And why did this fifth touching come about? He strengthened me. That fifth touch was to make him strong. So there was to see, there was to discern, there was to stand, there was to speak, and now to make strong. The touch of God can do a lot of things. And you and I need to realize that the touch of God really needs to be in our lives. We need to be able to understand when he's speaking to us. We need to be able to understand that the closer we live to him, the better it is for us. And when we receive that special touch from heaven, it's a special touch. And it'll give us the ability to understand. It'll give us the ability to discern. It'll give us strength. It'll give us the ability to stand with a firm resolve. Give us the ability to speak. Give us everything we need. And so tonight, as we looked at that one little phrase, I hope that that challenges you to go through your Bible very slowly. Let the sweet Spirit of God give you thoughts, give you phrases, give you words that you can begin to ransack the scriptures with. And you can begin to go through these passages here and these passages there. And all of a sudden, you'll begin to see a world of Bible open up to you. And so let's don't forget Daniel and all the special phrases that he's got, okay? Well, I thank you for being here. Let's stand together.